ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम द 10th कैंटो चैप्टर 1 चैप्टर एंटाइटल द एडवेंट ऑफ लॉर्ड कृष्णा इंट्रोडक्शन टेक्स्ट नंबर 44 तस्मान् कस्यचित् द्रोहम् आचरेत् स तथाविदः आत्मना क्षेमम् अन्विच्छन् द्रोग्दुर्वै परतो भयम् तस्मान् कस्यचित् द्रोहम् आचरेत् स तथाविदः आत्मना क्षेमम् अन्विच्छन् द्रोग्दुर्वै परतो भयम्। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, since envious, impious activities cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should one act impiously? Considering one's welfare, one should not envy anyone, for an envious person must always fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or in the next. Purport. Instead of being inimical towards other living entities, one should act piously by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord, thus avoiding a fearful situation both in this life and in the next. In this regard, the following moral instruction by the great politician Chanakya Pandit is very meaningful. Tyaja durjana samsargam bhaja sadhu samagamam kuru punyam ahoratram smara nityam anityatam. One should give up the company of devils, demons and non-devotees and should always associate with devotees and saintly persons. One should always act piously, thinking that his life is temporary and not be attached to temporary happiness and distress. The Krishna consciousness movement is teaching all of human society this principle of becoming Krishna conscious and thus solving the problems of life forever. Tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti so Arjuna. We'll read the translation again. So we are continuing to narrate the pastimes where Kamsa, although at one point was so affectionate to his sister Devaki, when he hears the Akashvani, his complete mood changes by 360 degrees. So at one time he's so affectionate and so loving, and he has actually taken the position of a charioteer in order to drive his sister to her husband's place. But then the moment he hears that she is going to be the cause of his death, immediately he is transformed into a most violent person, and he seizes Devaki's hair and is about to cut off her head. And then we see how Vasudeva tries to implore to Kamsa to try to somehow or the other pacify him and try to bring him to his senses. And here, indirectly, Vasudeva is calling Kamsa an envious person. Of course, we all know that Vasudeva is nothing but an epitome of envy. Kamsa is filled with envy. But Vasudeva is in such a situation that he cannot directly call him as an envious person. So, in a roundabout way, he tells Kamsa that it is not proper to be envious. So we see over here, this whole material world is actually running on envy. And even if you see the scriptures, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are so many instances where through the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadev Goswami wants to narrate to us how this particular quality, which is so deep-rooted in our heart, and which is the reason actually what brings us into this material world, this quality is so much deep-rooted that it is very difficult for us to bring it out. And not only us, but there are even more exalted personalities than us who project this particular quality of envy. Like we see in the pastime of Prithu Maharaj, when he was about to perform his 100th sacrifice, Indra is so envious because Indra is already a master of 100 sacrifices. So here is Prithu, who has just completed 99. So if you go to complete 100, then he would be equal to him. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says in such a heavy way that this material world is filled with envious people. And anybody who is not able to control his senses is envious of other persons. And of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is a Param Samhita, which actually is meant for those who are non-envious, Nirmatsaranam Satam. But we see so many examples of Indra himself being envious, in this case towards Prithu Maharaj, and then subsequently we see how he was envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, and also how Suruchi was envious of Suniti, which actually led to Dhruva Maharaj going into the forest. And similarly, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see so many instances like Gopal Chapala and Gopal Chakravarti, Amoga, Ramachandra Puri. So there are so many different personalities. And of course, through those personalities, because they are in this great literature, it obviously means that they are very exalted personalities. But they are exemplifying how important it is for us to be careful that we don't give in to this particular propensity of being envious. So this quality of envy, which we can discuss for the next few minutes, which is actually the reason why this whole world is running, the billboards if one sees, which exhort a particular person in order to purchase something. So what is it that actually motivates him to purchase something that he doesn't possess? Because he's envious of somebody else possessing it, he wants to be possessing it. So the advertising agency, the whole advertising agency is geared up in such a way just to promote a person's envy. And if you look at all the advertisements that are shown in all the movies of how a young person steps out of a very expensive car, and then you think, oh, I should be actually owning this car. If such a young person can be owning this car, why not me? But the reality is that it is very rare for a young person to be actually owning a car. I mean, such an expensive car. I had narrated this once, but I just thought I can share this once again. Like once I was in this Marine Drive, and suddenly a very large car just came, one of the most expensive cars in Bombay, just came and parked at the curb. And I was just thinking to myself that just like how one sees an advertisement, there would be a very handsome man would be getting out and, you know, escorting a very handsome or a beautiful girl outside. And I was just watching and seeing who would be coming out of this car. And the door of the car opened and the chauffeur got out. And he went to the backside first and then he removed out a wheelchair. And then he set up the wheelchair. And then he opened the back door and then practically with his hands, he was carrying a very, very old man. It must be at least 90 years old, who was practically an invalid. So this person was getting out of the car, and then he was made to sit on the wheelchair, and then he was taken for a little bit of ocean breeze. But the point is that my whole understanding of how it is that a young person, you know, when that's how the movie is projected. That's how the advertisement is projected, that there is a, you know, when all these beautiful things in life have to be associated with youth, with young person, so that then a person is automatically attracted. And in fact, if you look at the way in which companies are organized, large corporations, they actually take advantage of this particular aspect of envy just in order to increase their business. Like, we have this concept of what is called as a colony, right? I remember I had gone to visit one of our godbrothers who works at this Godrej colony in Vikhroli. Right, for a person who works in Godrej, you know, he will tell you that he doesn't work in Bombay. You know, he works in Vikhroli. Right. I mean, the ambience of that particular place is such that when you enter into that colony, you really feel that you're not in Bombay. You feel that you're in a different place altogether, somewhere in Lonavala or Mahabaleshwar. So much of greenery and, you know, wide roads and, you know, it's a large colony, maybe hundreds and hundreds of acres. But the moment you enter inside, you feel as if you're in a different world. So you ask a person who is working in Godrej whether he's staying in Bombay, he'll tell you, no, I'm not staying in Bombay, I'm staying in Vikhroli, right? Because he identifies himself so much with that place. And as we were going into the colony, I was just observing that there are, you know, different types of apartments. You know, there is a building of maybe three stories which is having a two-bedroom apartment. There are also buildings with one-bedroom apartment. And then as you move further into the colony, you will come across a building with three-bedroom apartments, four-bedroom apartments. And as you really go deep into the colony, you will find yourself into a place which is so beautiful. You know, the whole place is completely green, lush green, beautiful lawns, and that is where the bungalows start. You know, the four-bedroom bungalows and the five-bedroom bungalows. And the persons who are staying over there, every person who works in Godrej practically gets an accommodation. Of course, the whole reason why they are provided accommodation over there is that they become available 24/7, right? All the time, they should be available for the company. But anyway, to get an accommodation in Bombay itself is such a great benediction. So a person who works over there feels very, you know, secure that he is getting an accommodation inside the colony. But typically, you will find that the mentality of the person who is staying over there is always to move from one type of accommodation into another accommodation. Right. Although he's staying within the same colony. Right. So a person who is staying in a one-bedroom flat is always thinking and looking at a two-bedroom flat as he's going towards his work and thinking, when will I move into this two-bedroom flat? Right. And a person who is staying in a two-bedroom flat is thinking, when will I move into a three-bedroom flat? And a three-bedroom flat person is thinking, when I'll move into a bungalow? And in fact, this colony mentality, there was a book that was written by a very well-known author. I remember having read this book. It was called Goldfish in a Bowl. Right? Now, goldfish in a bowl, now we all know, we have seen so many goldfish in a bowl. And this goldfish, what does it do? It keeps on moving within the bowl and thinking that, you know, I'm having so much of space to move around. But a person who's staying in a colony has the same mentality. He has the mentality of a goldfish in a bowl. Because all throughout 24 hours, he is actually staying within the colony. He doesn't have to go outside the colony at all. Everything is provided within that colony. Right? You have a shopping complex, you have a movie theater, you have a restaurant, you have a gymnasium, and everything that you possibly would need in order to maintain yourself is available within that colony. And in fact, there are some colonies which have much more advanced facilities, you know, clubs and, you know, there are party halls and so, like, I remember there's one colony in near Nasik, it's a place called Ozer. where there are 10,000 people, this was about 20 years back, there are 10,000 people who are working for this company, Hindustan Aeronautics Limited. And it's unbelievable, such a huge place with so much of greenery and, you know, there's very few buildings, but there's a lot of open space. And everything that a person would need is available within that complex. So similarly, also in Vikhroli, you have this place where everything, so you develop what is called as a colony mentality, right? You go to the company to work in the morning and then you come back in the evening, so you see the same people, you know, whoever you're working with in your company, you know, obviously the people with whom you are, let's say your peer group, they're all staying in the same building mostly, right? So since you're staying in the same building, you have so much of interaction with them in the work situation and outside the work situation, and it's really becomes sometimes so claustrophobic, you know, for people who are working in an organization but then go outside in order to stay. For them, at least they have some variety, right? They have a different set of people with whom they are interacting outside as compared to those. But here in a colony, you have the same people 365 days of the year with whom you are interacting. And of course, you go to work, you spend about 8 to 10 hours or maybe 12 hours working. But then your wives, the wives of the people who are employed, or the spouses, they are, you know, mostly pretty much unoccupied. And this leads to a lot of gossiping and so much of envy between the families. And this devotee was once telling me how it was that there was one particular family who was very much contented with their way of life. You know, there was a very middle level executive in the company, and his wife was not at all demanding, and she was very you know, understanding, and you know, very devoted to her husband, very devoted to her family. So one day it so happened that the neighbor happened to buy a car, and in the evening when this person returns back from his work, he sees that his wife is there at the door ready to give him a glass of hot tea. So he's a little bit taken aback, because in the 20 years of marriage, he has never had a situation like this, where his wife comes and greets him at the door, ready to give him a cup of hot tea. So there's something afoot. He's just thinking in his mind that there must be something wrong today. But anyway, she makes him sit very nicely and asks him, how is it? How was your day today? Again, she's never in the last 20 years asked him, how was your day today? You know, so all the alarm bells in his mind is really ringing, and you know, so he just settles himself down, and then, you know, he sips the tea. And then his wife very casually mentions, you know, this Mehra family, they have purchased a new car. So he said, is it? So what is the make of the car? And then she said, they have purchased this car. So she said, I think it's high time that we also have a car. So he says, I'm not able to afford a car. And anyway, inside the colony, why do you need a car? Because transport is available. The company provides transport in order to go out. Whenever you want to go to the city, the bus is available. And, you know, within the colony, in any case, you can walk from one house to another house. Why do you need a car? So, you know, so she appears to be pacified. And then the husband thinks to himself, oh, I managed to convince her. Till they go to bed. And then, you know, after everything is over, she starts the conversation once again. So she says, you know, I think there is a need for us to have a car, because, you know, once in a while when we have the rainy season, it's so difficult for us to, you know, take the umbrella and go and stand in the bus stop waiting for the bus, and then we get wet, and, you know. So she starts, and practically the whole night she is giving various justifications as to why he should be buying a car. So then finally, you know, in the middle of the night, just so that he should get some sleep, he tells her, okay, I will somehow or the other, you know, think about it now that, you know. So next day morning, He goes to the personal manager. The personal manager has to apply. He has to apply for a loan. So he goes and applies. He goes and sees the personal manager. So the personal manager, when he sees him, he is all smiles. Said, "Yes, please come." And so we heard that Mr. Mehra has purchased a car. Is it true? So, I mean, the fact that Mr. Mehra has purchased a car, he's been hearing the whole night. So he said, "Yes, Mr. Mehra has purchased a car. So have you come to apply for a loan to purchase a car?" So this is the, you know, the personal manager could immediately understand that actually this person's wife has influenced him to purchase a car, which he actually never needs. So, if you look at the situation that is there today in this world, what you see in this particular family is actually increased millions and millions of times in large organizations, where one organization is envious against another organization. And then you see that even countries. For example, recently we had a very big crisis. I mean, most of you may not be aware, most of you are brahmacharis. But we had a very big crisis in the economic world where the United States of America was heading for a default in its debt obligation, right? So even, I mean, we were also not aware what the magnitude of the problem was. So, and the United States of America is considered to be one of the most secure economies in the world, right? Everybody thinks that America means very strong, nothing to worry about. But then what has happened is that over the last 30, 40 years, the American government has been borrowing so heavily from the public, which means the Americans, you know, just like how we, when we want a house loan or a car loan, we go to a bank and then we ask for a loan. Similarly, when a government wants to borrow money, it goes to the public. And then it issues bonds, and that's how the government gets the money from the public in order to finance all its activities, like building roads, or, you know, if they want to have a new space program, or buy a new submarine, or for its defense, or whatever. So this expenses which are incurred by the government are funded by way of loans from the public. But every government ensures that at the end of the year, you know, at least the income is either equal to the expenditure or the income is more than the expenditure. What is called as a budget surplus. So every year they make a budget and then they ensure that there is a surplus at the end of the year by which they can repay a part of the loan. But then on the 2nd of August was a deadline whereby the government had to repay a certain amount of their loans. And they had no money. The United States of America, which is considered to be one of the most wealthiest nations in the world, had no money in order to repay the debt unless and until they borrowed more money in order to repay the earlier debt. So, the limit to which the government could borrow was fixed at a certain figure, which of course is so mind-boggling that, you know, we wouldn't even be able to comprehend what is the enormous amount of money that is involved. In this case, it is $14.7 trillion, right? If you convert that into rupees, it is something like 650 lakh crores, right? So this is about $15 trillion was the amount which the government had said that this is the limit. So the government had to approve a limit which was higher so that the government could again borrow money in order to repay this loan, which was falling due on 2nd of August. There was so much of deliberation within the government, how to do it, you know, whether we should do it, and if we do it, then what will be the consequences? And if at all we increase the limit, then how do we, you know, slowly start repaying this money back? I mean, there was so much of discussions that were going on. And the entire world economy is watching and waiting to see what is going to happen to the USA. Because if there is a default on the 2nd of August, then practically we would see a repetition of what happened in 2008. The whole economy of the entire world would start collapsing, right? So the whole world was watching with bated breath, and practically every country, the stock markets were really in a very volatile situation, in a turmoil. Now if one analyzes as to why is it that such a situation was created in the first place, such a large deficit of $15 trillion, the government would keep on borrowing money. Now this is completely inconceivable, that a person is borrowing money in order to maintain himself just so that he can be viewed as very prosperous in the eyes of society or in the eyes of the other countries in the world. The whole economic system in that country was so much geared up in order to project an impression that is different from what it actually is, that they kept on borrowing money. So if one actually analyzes the situation, one finds that it's only out of rampant greed. And actually, if they wanted to really collect this money from the public, then all that they would need to do was to tax the public. Right? The only thing that was required was to raise more money from the public by way of taxes. But then there is such a resistance from the public because their own sense gratification was getting affected. Right? So they did not agree to any tax increases, and the government on one side could not impose any spending cuts, that means reduce the expenses. So this whole deficit year after year after year kept on increasing to such an extent that it has become completely unmanageable. So intense greed and just this particular desire in order to be projecting themselves as a world-class country, a country which everybody looks up to. So the whole thing which the government had somehow or the other managed to hide over the last 30, 40 years just came out into the open, and everybody was discussing this particular debt default, the possibility of a debt default by the United States of America. Right? So we see that this particular propensity that is there is increased and multiplied by millions and millions of times, and even large countries fall prey to this particular propensity of envy and greed. So I was listening to a class of Srila Prabhupada in Chicago in 1974, and Srila Prabhupada was saying that the only way by which we can overcome this particular propensity for greed and envy is by performing devotional service. And we see how it is that just by performing any of the various processes of devotional service, how we can be completely focused and how we can become indifferent to the attack of Maya and the attack of the senses. Just this factor of being of performing devotional service, direct devotional service. Like I remember once in the year 2004, the whole temple decided to go to Mayapur for participating in the Abhishek ceremony of the Panchatattva deities. The deities were newly installed, and everybody decided that, you know, that the temple, all the brahmacharis should go and participate. And a few of us stayed back. Actually, I had a ticket, but I was to go a few days later. So at that time, you know, the brahmacharis handed over the service of the deities to us. A few of us took responsibility in order to take care of the deities. And I remember that on a particular date, you know, there were not so many pujaris available in order to do the aartis and the offerings. So I had an opportunity to do 3 aartis and 5 offerings, right, on a particular day. So, right, Mangalarti, and the afternoon waking up, Vaikalika, and the Sandhya Bhog Aarti. So I had 3 aartis and 5 offerings, you know. So I was just at the end of the day, and I was to actually catch a flight to go to Mayapur the next day. And I had this ticket with me. And then the evening, I'm just thinking to myself, what is the purpose in going to Mayapur? You know, why do we have to go to Mayapur in the first place? I mean, at the most, one would go to Mayapur, we'll be able to see the Abhishek of the deities from a distance. Right? There would never be a chance of doing direct Abhishek for the Lord. But here, I'm actually doing 3 aartis for the Lord, and I just finished 5 offerings, and at the end of the day, I'm physically so exhausted. You know, the whole body is actually screaming for rest. But then the mind is so ecstatic, feeling so nice and so blissful, that immediately I made up my mind that there's no point in going to Mayapur. I started looking around to see if there's anybody who could use my ticket. And then I found one person who was in the IYS, and somehow or the other, he last moment he could get some leave, and he was looking around for a person who could give him a ticket, and here was me who could give him a ticket, and you know, I just gave the ticket to him and told him. So he asked me, "You're not wanting to go to Mayapur?" I said, no problem. I don't want to go to Mayapur. Quite happy over here. So this bliss that one experiences when one does direct devotional service is so intense that, you know, particularly for a pujari, like, we all know this particular instance where Srila Prabhupada once in the middle of the night called the pujari of the temple and told him, "Do you realize how fortunate you are? The pujari service is the most intense and the most ecstatic service. Do you realize how fortunate you are?" And the pujari in the middle of the night, he was woken up from his sleep, said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. So that is the, you know, intensity with which you are able to somehow or the other engage your mind and senses in direct devotional service. So anything for that matter, if you are distributing books, like we have so many pastimes of devotees who go out and distribute books, and somehow they see that they are not even able to figure out whether it's day or night. I mean, it's so intense that for hours they are out in the cold, particularly in the Western countries. You know, it's freezing cold during the book marathon in December, and still devotees are doing so much of intense book distribution. Or you go out on yatra and there is so much of physical exertion that you are going through. But you're blissful because the mind and the senses and the whole body is engaged in direct devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada in this purport is making the particular point that we have to dovetail our entire propensity into direct devotional service. Instead of being inimical towards other living entities, one should act piously by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord, thus avoiding a fearful situation both in this life and in the next. And then Srila Prabhupada says that one should actually give up the association of demons, devils and non-devotees, and should always associate with devotees and saintly persons. So, just the fact that you are in the association of devotees, right? Recently all the devotees came back from the IYS Yatra, and whoever you ask, they'll tell you it was so ecstatic. Just 4 days, like Gaurgopal Prabhu was telling me yesterday that, you know, devotees, practically these are boys who are not even, you know, exposed to Krishna consciousness. Some of them are so new into Krishna consciousness that they were not even chanting. So they came and then they were all sitting together and chanting their rounds. So just the fact that you are associating with devotees makes you so much inspired to practice your own Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada has given us this opportunity through this wonderful association of devotees to somehow or the other dovetail our propensity into service. In whichever way we may be best suited, the Lord engages us, and then we see that there is, you know, this desires for mundane happiness through the contact with the material senses is somehow or the other suppressed in the initial stages, and gradually we become attached to performing devotional service. So we'll stop over here. Are there any questions or comments? Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
So they can borrow more.
Economics class.
Sorry.
Economics.
They really